Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
So the Lakers' playoff run is over, and now the long offseason awaits. But that doesn't mean that your NBA playoff fun has to end, thanks to the Autograph app. On the Autograph app, all of your favorite sports content, sports articles, videos, podcasts, including yours truly, can be found in one place. And the more you read, listen, like, comment, and engage with this content, the more fans' coins you'll earn, which you can then parlay into some pretty sweet sports prizes like $24 playoff tickets or $2 signed jerseys. Also, throughout the NBA playoffs, Autograph will continue to drop awesome rewards for fans, including 25% off Lakers merchandise. So all you need to do is download the Autograph app, check the description box of this episode, click the link, use the code LITLEGACY, sign up, create an account, and start fandoming away. Get rewarded for your fandom today on Autograph. All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where hurry up offense? More like hurly up offense. Because after today's transpirings, we are all offended. None more so than Dan Hurley. So the Lakers' secret number one head coaching candidate all along, celebrated UConn head coach Dan Hurley, has turned down the Lakers' 6 years, $70 million offer to be their new head coach, and decided to remain with the UConn Huskies. Coach K Deja Vu, Ty Lue Fiasco Part 2, whatever you want to call it, Lakers Nation is not happy, and we all want to hurl. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, what a whirlwind last 5 or 6 days it's been. Nay, what a hurlwind. Okay, I'll stop. This time last week, a good portion of Lakers Nation, myself included, barely had any idea who Dan Hurley was. Today, we were all throwing up Hail Marys or lighting incense at the local temple in his holy name, hoping he would take the Lakers head coaching job. But he didn't. And yeah, it was a gut punch. And regardless of how you want to spin it, the Lakers not being able to close again here, that is what's going to be the story, and that's what has been the story this entire day. But Tommy, how are you feeling? Did the Lakers fumble the bag? Take me through your emotions going back to last Thursday when Woj dropped that Woj bomb and told us all that the Lakers have actually been eyeing Dan Hurley this entire time. But yeah, mainly give me your feelings today with regards to the Lakers not being able to close.
It's definitely disappointing. I mean, if you watch college basketball, you're familiar with Dan Hurley, like especially the last couple of years that UConn has been so dominant, and not just dominant winning back-to-back championships, right? But it wasn't just like the way they won, right? It was like beating every single team they played like easily. I mean, their run last year was even more impressive to me than this year. Last year, it felt like they beat every team by 20 points. And even this year on their run, they were beating every team by double digits. If you watch March Madness regularly, like, you know, right? There are games where it comes down to a last second, somebody just threw up a lucky shot. I guess my point with all of this is, like, this guy was so good, he just took chance out of the equation in every game. And so for that reason, right, it was intriguing. Of course, he has no NBA experience. Of course, the first question is, are his 18 second his set, complicated sets that take like 18 seconds to develop, you know, is that going to work in the NBA? Like, are you going to get a team that's patient enough to run that? Are you going to find stars that are patient enough to do that? Is there enough time in a shot clock? Are there enough possessions in a game for your team? So there were like a lot of questions, but at the end of the day, Dan Hurley is one, you know, is very proven at multiple levels. I mean, high school and college. He's won back-to-back national championships. You know, his brother is a coach. His father was a coach. He's a basketball guy. Of the other names kind of floated around out there, this was the first name that I was like, okay, if they were able to get him, that would be like a truly inspired coaching choice. And like, mm-hmm. they're willing to make the long-term commitment to him, and they're willing to pay him more than they've paid other coaches in the past. You know, I'm sure we'll get into that in a bit, but it just, the whole thing was just very weird. And I don't know if you want to talk about like the process or what, but it was like the Lakers have been quote unquote searching for a coach for like a month, right? It's like we fired Darvin Ham like a month ago. It's very unclear what this process has been. Like if you listen to Shams, it's like it's been JJ Redick from the beginning. He's the front runner. If you listen to Woj, it's like the Lakers always wanted Danny Hurley this whole time. And you can't really figure out like what the heck these people are doing. And I don't know that like the last few days has made that any more clear. I mean, what was the point of this one day meeting and then Dan Hurley setting his own timeline to make a final decision and all these reports coming out that this was like an 8-year, $100+ million offer and it comes out to like 60 or 70, which is still like a really good offer. But I don't know. It was like, it doesn't give you as a fan a lot of faith that the decision makers have any idea of what they're doing. And I think that's concerning, right? Because this has now become like a recurring trend with this front office, right? At some point, you just have to like laugh because it's not, it feels like we're the only team that ends up constantly in this situation. It started and it's all been under the Pelinka regime, by the way. It felt like this kind of thing never really used to happen. I mean, you would hear under the Jim Buss, Mitch days, oh, the Lakers weren't able to get LaMarcus Aldridge. Oh, the Lakers didn't have a great pitch for Carmelo. Okay, sure. So mega stars not signing with your team, that happens every day. The weirdness around this, like, the Lakers are closing on a deal with Ty Lue, and then, like, Ty Lue is photographed at his birthday party with a Lakers cake, and then the next day it's like the Lakers couldn't close the deal. They're the front runner. They're the preferred destination for Kawhi Leonard, and then it's like 3 days later he's being traded to the Clippers. So it just, like, over and over and over, this kind of thing is happening. And so I'm like less annoyed about the Hurley stuff. At the end of the day, that was a crapshoot, like most other hires, about whether that was going to work out. But ultimately, it's the process and the front office, the way they're handling all of this stuff. I don't know. It's kind of embarrassing. And that's kind of the more disturbing part about all of this for me.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure if one person is to blame or if this just naturally would have happened the way that it happened. It's been coincidental. I mean, the Lakers did lose out on Coach K back in 2004, and that was under, you know, I think Jerry Buss was still alive, right? And Kupchak was handling things. But to your point, you're still left embarrassed by this. And if anything, the Lakers have an order of operations optics problem that they need to get under control, because you'd imagine that, and I think you probably now see why they've tried to keep things under wraps, and I give them credit for keeping it under wraps as long as they have, because it all came out very quickly these last few days. But if they knew that they weren't going to be able to close this deal, maybe that's why it's been under wraps as much as it has, or been tightly knit as much as it has. But yeah, you know, so here are the contract details. The $70 million deal is the largest coaching deal the Lakers have ever given someone in franchise history in terms of dollar amount. It's also the longest term contract they've given someone in the last 25 years and maybe in franchise history. I just wasn't able to go back that long. But the last coaching hire who received a contract this big in terms of years was Luke Walton. He received a 5-year deal. And then going back, it was Rudy Tomjanovich. He received a 5-year deal. And then before that, it was Phil Jackson who received a 5-year deal. So Dan Hurley surpasses all of those candidates, including Phil Jackson. So it's not like the Lakers didn't come to the table with a quote-unquote serious offer. I think the problem here is that in a vacuum, The Lakers were working under the context of their franchise history, it feels like. But if you look at the relative context of the market that Dan Hurley was operating within, with Kentucky offering him more money, I think that Kentucky offered him like 6 years, $100 million or something like that. All I know is Kentucky offered him a deal that was worth more than what the Lakers offered him. And then even though he's coming back to UConn on a slightly lesser deal, I mean, if you factor in California taxes and whatnot, the Lakers really didn't offer him that much of a competitive offer. So in the Lakers' context, in their franchise history, this is the largest amount they've ever given somebody. This is the longest amount of years they've ever given somebody. And considering it's a first-time head coach, maybe in a vacuum you say, what were you expecting the Lakers to do, you know? But
yeah.
But again, in the context of the larger market of what coaches are getting paid now, even for a first-time head coach, having understood that you let the cat out of the bag, and this was such a big story for the last 4 days to such ridiculous levels, Tommy, that people were talking about, you know, the cafeteria lady at UConn and what they heard from her about what was going to happen today. To the extent that it got so crazy, the noise got so loud, and we were analyzing every single thing that Dan Hurley was doing, from his visit to LA to him going to a Billy Joel concert at Madison Square Garden. If you're the Lakers, you have to close this deal no matter what. And even for optics' sake, you have to at least, I don't know, pony up a little bit more than $11.6 million a year, you know? And so I think that's where most fans are at right now. Not so much in terms of, oh, the Lakers didn't put together a serious offer, but when you let something out like this and it takes on a life of its own, and you've got Lakers fans like starting to diagram all the different horn sets that they know of, that they know Dan Hurley can put together out of timeouts, like, you kind of got to do everything you can to close the deal, and the Lakers didn't. Maybe Dan Hurley would have still said no to a 7-year, $100 million offer, but I think you, at least for optics' sake, have to put that offer on the table and do everything you can. And the question now is, did the Lakers do everything they could do? And I think the reason why, Tommy, it feels like somewhat more of a gut punch, even though, you know, for me, again, I didn't know who Dan Hurley was prior to last year, but the more and more I dug into who he was as a coach, just who he was as a schematic coach, and the type of culture he has built every step along the way of his coaching tenure, I mean, I bought in immediately. And I think the biggest gut punch for me, Tommy, is that it feels like we lost out on a potentially pretty prosperous long-term timeline with Hurley, because it meant that we were going to have a sort of, this was supposed to be like a Brad Stevens sort of program, Tommy. Like, it felt like the Lakers were ready to hand over not only coaching responsibilities, but also player personnel scouting and player development responsibilities over to Dan Hurley. And that's illustrated with the, you know, the 6-year deal. So yeah, the money, the years, the control, this wasn't a let's see how you do in 2 to 3 years and then you're fired. This was a Brad Stevens, build your program, you lead, we'll follow sort of deal. And Hurley was supposed to be the new Pop, our new version of Popovich, who would build such an indisputable culture and identity around us for the Lakers that people around the league in a couple of years would start seeing the different types of players around the league, different types of draft prospects, and they'd be able to say, oh, that dude's a Laker guy. That dude's a Dan Hurley guy. Beyond players just being superstars that the Lakers typically like to go after. You know what I mean? So I think taking all that into context, that's why for me it was kind of like, ah, damn it, we really missed out. You know, I appreciate the Lakers' thought process. It felt very inspired, like you said. But when you let that out into the world and you allow us to start thinking about all of these possibilities, you got to close. And again, the Lakers did not close. And like you mentioned, it feels like this has been a recurring trend, whether it's a systematic problem or whether it's coincidence. I know a lot of people are going to say it's not coincidence. But yeah, that's why it felt like so much of a gut punch. So anything else to add about the Lakers fumbling the bag here? And I guess anything you want to add?
Yeah, so I think my big takeaway from like all of this is there really are two sides. I understand, and I will be, I have other reasons why I want to like jump on the front office a little bit that I'll get to in a second. But like, there's two ways to look at the problem or like this particular situation, right? I think one way is the Lakers wanted their guy. They should have, you know, come out with a way over the top crazy offer just to make sure there's like no rational way you can walk away. Let's put it this way. $11.6 million would make Dan Hurley the fifth highest paid coach in the NBA. The four people above him are Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, Eric Spoelstra, and Monty Williams, who again is like, you know, we can debate whether Monty deserved that deal, but sort of similar thing, right? It's like the Pistons were hiring for like a really horrific situation that nobody wanted. And to get someone like Monty, you have to go over market. And so, you know, but look, that's the list. That's it. Full stop. That is the list of NBA coaches who would be making more money than Dan Hurley. Three of those four have won, you know, NBA championships, multiple NBA championships. I don't know. I think, you know, you could look at this and say like, okay, should Dan Hurley be making $1.5 million, like less than $1.5 million less per year than Spoelstra and Greg Popovich? I think you could make a really strong argument with the combination of the years and the money. The Lakers did come out at a crazy offer. I think the problem is, you know, and to jump on the front office, this is where I'll do it, right? It's like Jeannie Buss is like living in 1980s Los Angeles still, I think, right? And she still views this as like, everybody wants to be in LA, the city sells itself, like, you know, like, why would you not want to be here? That's going to be, you know, to the extent we're giving you like the same offer you're getting somewhere else, you know, the benefit is you get to live in LA and work for the Lakers. And that's the pinnacle. And I think, you know, that's not the pinnacle anymore. And that's not to say that the Lakers job is unattractive, which I feel like that's like another overreaction that has sort of come around on social media and from some of like the national reporters. I don't think the Lakers have an unattractive job. I just think to your point, like Dan Hurley, as of last year, was currently being paid $6 million a year by UConn. We know that he has an extension offer on the table from UConn. We don't know the details. We don't know the amounts, but presumably it's more than six. Okay. He had the offer from Kentucky, and just to level set on that offer, from what I saw, because there's been like a lot of crazy noise on this, but from what I saw, it was $11 million. You mm-hmm. can't per year. You can't offer him 0.6 million more, you know, to like per year to come run your team in the NBA. Which, by the way, NBA is not college. You're not playing, you know, 30 games. You're playing 82 games. It's a nonstop grind. And you can say like, oh, okay, well, what about recruiting? What about this? What about that? Okay, like recruiting is schmoozing. It's not like game planning for 82 games. Being on the road, you know, half the year away from your family. Like there's just like a lot of factors, you know. It's like when you're dealing with college kids, it's like UConn of course has road games, but it's like you're playing road games mostly in conference against schools that are like not that far away from you. And so it's like, I think people really understated, you know, the same way that we always look at guys, oh, they're from Southern California, so they might want to come home. Dan Hurley's entire life, you know, is like in the Northeast. He's like lived there his whole life. He's like, or most of his life, right? Other than coaching, I guess his whole family's there. His wife is from there. He's from there. Like, I think his kids are out of the house at this point, but like they all grew up there and I think live close. And his parents, you know, live in the Northeast and go to all of his games. And it's just like, you know, Connecticut, it's not like driving from Connecticut to New York is like driving from California to Oregon, you know, Southern California to Oregon is like an hour, dude. So it's like, you know, to get from where he was at UConn to like pretty much anywhere in New York, except for like upstate. So, you know, my point is, these are like significant factors that cannot be overlooked. And the thing that's the most disappointing to me about this whole process is the fact that we must have had, I mean, like if Twitter has this intel, like Rob has this intel, right? Or should have this intel about like what the current, and must have through Hurley's agent, like what his current offer was from UConn. He knows what the offer was from Kentucky. And we just came in like slightly over the, so like to your point, if we really, really, really wanted this guy to the point that we're like leaking this news about how everyone, we're so excited, he's our number one guy, and like we wanted him since the beginning, like you have to come out with some crazy $100 million offer. And if you don't think that's fair, then you shouldn't have done this in the first place. That's like, that's kind of my point, right? Like, I think it's a rational, very, very rational perspective to take that Dan Hurley at this stage in his career is not worth committing $100 million to guaranteed money. That is extremely rational. But you should have made that decision before it came to this stage, because it's not just you guys look embarrassing now. It's like you could say, okay, who gives, you know, who cares? It's not just that, though. It's like every other coach. It's like the Frank Vogel situation all over again. So now whoever we hire knows that they're coming in, like is coming in under this media spotlight of being option B. Same thing with Vogel, who like, okay, cool, Vogel's our coach, I guess he's our leader, but like everyone knew we wanted Ty Lue. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, we weren't willing to pay Ty Lue, so Vogel was the cheap plan B. And it's gonna be the same thing, dude. Whoever we hire, whether it's Borrego, whether it's Redick, whoever it is not going to get a 6-year, $70 million offer. So it's once again going to be, here is our backup offer, who like doesn't make that, you know, is not going to get paid that much. It's just like awkward and creates this weird like culture in this weird environment. And so I don't know. I hear everything about like Hurley, that was supposed to be our Brad Stevens and, you know, all these things. And I buy all that. I just, again, if that was the plan, you need, before it came to this point, before you even make an offer, like you need to know, we are willing to like double this guy's current highest offer, basically, to make him leave everything in his life behind, including his wife, who probably didn't want to be here and may have just like been like, okay, whatever, I'm just going to stay here and you're going to have to fly back and forth. Who knows, right? And like leave everything behind. It has to be like, you will never get an offer sniffing this again. And he literally already has offers sniffing this right now. So it's like, you know, you just can't compare it. And I think like again, Jeannie will get blasted. Rob will get blasted for how this turned out. And maybe they deserve it, but they deserve it for that aspect. Not necessarily the offer they made. The offer they made, I guess, in a vacuum is like pretty fair, but it's just like, this was not like how you over the top, you know, come out and just blow someone away. And like, you know, it wasn't that. That was like the, when we saw the news last night about how like, oh, the Lakers made a compelling case. It's like making a compelling case was like not enough. You need to have like such an offer that this guy literally can't walk out of the room without signing it because he's going to be afraid that you're going to take it away because it's like that good, you know. And we clearly didn't do that.
Yeah, I think it just shows a lack of being able to read the room, not only of where your franchise stands relative to where the NBA has gone over the last couple of years, but also not being able to read the room with regards to Dan Hurley's context. For everything that you mentioned about where he's coming from, what he's looking for. And yeah, to your point, if you think that this guy is going to be your next Brad Stevens, your next Greg Popovich, then you have to kind of put your money where your mouth is relative to all of the other competitive offers on the table. And put that on the table in front of him. And I think for me, the most disappointing part about all this is, Tommy, we are, 2 weeks out from the NBA draft, and we still don't have a coach. Not only do we not have an NBA coach, but the process, to your point, is very messy and awkward now. And we're going to try and do this damage control thing and try and spin things one way so that it doesn't look as bad. I mean, at the end of the day, maybe none of that matters. I mean, we were able to work it out with Frank Vogel, but it's just, you would hope that in the LeBron James and Anthony Davis era, all the missteps along the way, you would hope that the next time we have an opportunity to right our wrongs and right the sins of the past, that we would actually take that opportunity to do something different, you know? But again, here are the Lakers not being able to close. So why don't we take it to break? When we return, let's close this episode out and just talk about what now, I guess. So yeah, we'll catch you guys after the turn.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
All right, so we are back. Tommy, what do we do now? Are there any reasons to be encouraged about the Lakers' thought process of trying to go after a candidate like this and trying to push forth a program and a vision for the long-term future that also kind of more heavily involves Anthony Davis or heavily shifts the focus over to Anthony Davis? All those things that we've heard about the Lakers' foresight, I agree with and I am actually encouraged by, but at the end of the day, it kind of falls short when you, again, don't execute and you don't deliver. But what are your thoughts on what now, and are there any silver linings to be had here? Is it J.J. Redick time? Might we actually go after Mike Anori now because things are weird with J.J. Redick? What now for you?
So I think at the end of the day, and this is why like this whole coaching thing is so exhausting to me, with a bunch of like Twitter nerds arguing about who technically runs more plays per game or, you know, whatever, right? It's like we, like, as a collective basketball fan base, we need to just accept that like a lot of this is a crapshoot. Okay, nobody knows what a random assistant is going to do when they get promoted. No, the same way that nobody knew that Steve Kerr with no experience was going to win four championships, and like including one in his first year of coaching, right? And so there are so many variables, and ultimately at the end of the day, Joe Mazzulla is not an elite NBA coach, right? From what we've seen, and sort of like, I don't know, maybe he will develop into that, but I don't think currently today he is an elite NBA coach. Jason Kidd is not necessarily an elite NBA coach. They're very good coaches, both of them. I'm not trying to like throw them under the bus. Oh. I would take either of them in a heartbeat. Right?
Joe Mazzulla says some weird ass stuff, but yes.
Yeah. He's weird, but he's like pretty good, right? Good enough. And I think the point here is that like Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, Eric Spoelstra, and Monty Williams, you know, the three of the four coaches I named as being paid more than Dan Hurley, three out of those four didn't make the playoffs, and the one that did was eliminated in the first round. So like coaching can take you want a good coach, okay? And at the end of the day, it's like a fringe thing that like it could help on the edges, like if you're having, you know, if it's a really close talent matchup, it can help you in the playoffs. It's still the NBA and talent is still going to win. So as long as your coach is not like Darvin Ham, like who's like not running any plays, has no idea what he's doing, never seems to be prepared for like, just runs the same defensive schemes against everybody, regardless of whether people are making shots, like no in-game adjustments. Like unless you have something like that, or like Luke Walton during his first run with us, where it was, you felt like the coaching was affirmatively making us worse, then you know that you have a problem. If you don't have that, I kind of don't care. Frank Vogel has been fired like four times and won us an NBA championship. So, and you know, he got fired after being with the Magic. He got fired obviously by the Pacers after some success by us, and after 1 year with Phoenix. So, you know, the fact that he won a championship didn't like elevate him to some higher sense of like spiritualism with respect to NBA coaching. Like he's the same guy. And so for that reason, like J.J. Redick, if he's willing to come in and do the grind, he clearly knows basketball. And so like, is he going to be like one of the best coaches in the NBA? I don't know, but I have as much faith in him as James Borrego or like any of these other people, because it's kind of a crapshoot and somebody just needs to be able to like kind of do things like call plays, like make some adjustments, get the rotations down. But like, other than that, it's, I don't know. We need to focus on the roster still.
Yeah.
And so I'm like a lot more concerned about that than the coaching thing at this point, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think first and foremost, I'm with everybody who's saying we need to be more concerned about the draft, potential trades, how we juggle our books as the new CBA's rules actually go into full effect this summer, how we retool our roster. Obviously, the coaching hire is very important, but as far as the vacuum of this next year goes, Tommy, roster building will be the most important factor in how far we go next year, because whoever we hire is likely going to be a first-year head coach or an inexperienced head coach, so the roster almost needs to be self-sustaining. And that job falls on Rob Pelinka. And so my thing is, Rob, hire yourself some help. Go hire Bob Myers as general manager so he can do all of the, you know, moneyballing to save you some time. And yeah, you know, it's going to feel like a downgrade going from obviously the Dan Hurley program to J.J. Redick, because I think what we're offering J.J. Redick is not a full-on six-year program where he gets carte blanche at picking his players from the draft and whatnot. The J.J. Redick thing is by and large going to be Luke Walton redux, where we kind of hold his hand a little bit. But last question for you is there this is a super stretch and this is super mental gymnastics E, but is there any silver lining to this maybe humbling Redick a bit if he is still the candidate and letting Redick know that, hey, this was your competition and this is who we were going to hire. So now that we're turning the job back to you, this is how hard we want you to work. This is the shoes that you're going to fill, even though those shoes were never actually filled by Dan Hurley. Am I reaching too much, or could this motivate JJ in a way? Because my problem with JJ has always been, this guy is arrogant. He thinks he's got the Lakers job locked down probably, but oh, actually it was Dan Hurley all along. JJ, are you ready to, you know, we're pivoting to you. Are you ready to step into the shoes, given the fact that a lot of fans' expectations were, we were ready to bow at the altar of Dan Hurley?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a stretch.
I think it's a bit of a stretch. I think, like, JJ, he's going to have a lot to prove. I mean, I think a lot of these guys underestimate the, like, NBA grind, right? And I think JJ is probably, I mean, JJ, in that sense, like, he played in the NBA, but like, to your point, he does have this arrogance that he kind of just gets it. And like, being a player is different than a coach, right? If you're a different class, you're not paid as much. You're like, have to, now you're in charge of like dealing with the ego. It's just like a lot. And that's why it's like the first time head coach thing often doesn't work out. And so like, I don't know. I don't think this will motivate him more. I just wonder if like, all of the leaks about like how things went with this whole process, and like, you know, I just wonder if, I don't know.
Well, how about this? Is the silver lining that we actually go with a more quote unquote established coach, still going to be a first time head coach, but let's say it's Mike Anori or David Adelman. Would you prefer that, or you want the inspired JJ Redick? I think for me, for the Lakers, I just want them to show some conviction, some commitment, and get the job done, get the deal done, whoever it is.
No, I 100% agree with you. And if you go off like NBA Twitter nerds, right, it's not necessarily Mike Anori. It's more Adelman, right? That's the guy that people seem to like because he's been like directly quoted by like Mike Malone and Jokic as being like the offensive guy, like the offensive head coach. And so it's like, you kind of get the sense that he at least, like, obviously if you've been the offensive coordinator of Denver for the last few years, then like you've had some success there in the NBA. And so like, that would be the guy I would be strongly looking at. I think the problem is like with a lot of these guys, right? Are LeBron and AD going to come in and respect Mike Anori? Are they going to come in and respect David Adelman? I don't know. JJ Redick, you feel like you at least have LeBron on your side, but yeah. I don't know how Anthony Davis feels about JJ Redick. Mm. I think he's, you know, if you believe the leaks, he's just sort of like JJ's whatever, you know? So,
yeah.
So that's what, like, I don't know how it's going to work. And I just, yeah, to your point, it's like, this podcast actually ended up stressing me out quite a bit. Because it's like, you're looking at the Cal, you're right, dude. It's 2 weeks away is the NBA draft. We literally don't have a coach. So we don't know. Are we getting James Borrego? Are we getting some like veteran coach who like is not going to be that concerned with player development? Are we getting like, we don't know where Adelman and Nori stand on player development. Are we getting JJ who has no experience of player development? Or are we going to get some guy who's like, I'm fully invested in player development? Like, we don't know. And so we're going into the draft totally blind on that. Which is like, it's just like I don't understand why making a deal for these guys is like, it seems to be like so hard and so like ass backwards when like Rob Pelinka was an agent for so many years and like, this was his job, was like making deals. And so it's like, I just don't understand why it's so hard for them to do it now.
Yeah. And I think this is why they kept things so close to the vest, right? But they're extremely naive if they thought they could keep it that closely knit to the vest until they actually got a deal done. It was always going to come out because Hurley was looking for an extension. Hurley's close with Woj. So this is how everything turned out. My biggest thing is just go fix the roster. If there's any silver lining to JJ Redick, it's the fact that there's less of a learning curve with regards to how he interacts with the players since he was just a player like 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, he was teammates with Jackson Hayes. And my biggest concern for Dan Hurley was the adjustment he'd have to make jumping into the NBA as a college coach who was super passionate, fiery, and intense. I did not think that was going to fly with these pampered NBA millionaires right off the bat, and that he would have to tone it down a bit. With JJ Redick, the one thing I'll give him credit for is, even though he's arrogant, his media personality is very arrogant. I think he knows how, I mean, he was a player, so he knows the current vibe and tenor of the NBA right now, how to interact with the players, how to level with them. So if we go back to JJ Redick, that's one thing that I'm hoping that he'll be able to carry through as head coach. But yeah, for now, please, Rob, get the roster in order. Find a coach. Let's make some smart deals. Let's make some smart trades. And we're all just crossing our fingers because right now it seems like a mess again. But whatever you do next, please do it with conviction, execute, and deliver somehow. With that said, that'll do it for this episode. Sad day for Lakers Nation, but hoping we can turn this around somehow. So till then, Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.